I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixieland, where I was born, early on one frosty morn. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Oh, I wish I was in Dixie. Hooray, hooray. In Dixieland I'll take my stand, to live and die in Dixie. Away.
The Civil War both divided and united America, so it's fitting that Randall Poster has called his new 32-track collection of songs from the Civil War era Divided and United. It includes very familiar songs like Dixie and Battle Hymn of the Republic in unadorned ways that offer us a unique window into the past, along with others that have been lost in time. And he's assembled the most amazing range of voices to sing them, including Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, Leanne Womack, Ralph Stanley, Taj Mahal, Chris Thiele, and Cowboy Jack Clement. I'm very pleased that Randall Poster could be here with me today to talk about this major undertaking. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me.
This isn't what you'd call your day job, is it? Aren't you what's called a music supervisor in the movies and on television?
Yeah, I think that's what I spend most of my time doing. But in a way, this was a nice compliment in that there was a movie in my mind happening that I was creating music for.
And did you create a director that you were working for? Because I imagine the job is very different when you're working for Wes Anderson on something like Moonrise Kingdom, or for Martin Scorsese at Boardwalk Empire, or someone like Todd Haynes.
Right. I think this was a movie maybe at points. Some days it was being directed by Ulysses Grant, and then some days maybe it was Robert E. Lee.
What got you thinking about this project?
Well, I had been working on a movie in Nashville called Country Strong, and I love country music, native New Yorker that I am. After we finished the movie and I got to spend a lot of time with the musical establishment in Nashville, and I was looking to engage them on another project. And one morning I came down to breakfast, and there in the Nashville, Tennessee, was the announcement that it was the start of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. And so that what sort of prompted.
Well, how much did you know about the music of the Civil War when you started doing this?
Well, I think I had, you know, there were certain songs that I think have lived presently in the American musical landscape, but really it was just a starting point. I mean, obviously there's the Stephen Foster songs that we all know and love, but it took a lot of research and a lot of conversation to help me get my head around the larger picture.
I was surprised that some of the songs I'm familiar with, like Listen to the Mockingbird, were songs of the Civil War.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, Listen to the Mockingbird, I knew that was one we had to do when someone had told me that it was Abraham Lincoln's favorite song. And again, the there are a lot of these songs that were popularized during the Civil War that I think had evolved over time and tradition. So we wanted to do songs of the Civil War, but also some of these songs I think were pieces that the boys brought into the Civil War and were popularized by the fact that music was really the sole entertainment of the troops in the field and helped to soothe the wounds of the family back home.
Well, Dixie, which we opened with, that really was tied to minstrel shows, wasn't
right.
it? It wasn't really a song of the South. If anything, it was a song created in the North.
Well, there's a lot of debate about the roots and the birth of Dixie. But it was certainly popularized in the North in the minstrel tradition and then filtered back down south.
And ironically, although it became an emblem of the White South, it was sung by white minstrels in blackface.
Right. Right. Well, it's interesting that a lot of these melodies were adapted by both sides ultimately. And so it was really a very protean musical landscape back in the mid-19th century.
How did you deal with lyrics that are considered offensive today, like the song Kingdom Come?
Yeah, well, I didn't want to look away from it, and I didn't want to avoid it. And what we really tried to do was try to render the just sort of the panoply of musical perspectives. And so we couldn't shy away from it, and hopefully we dealt with it in a way that has a certain spirit and sensitivity.
Wasn't it an abolitionist song? Even
yeah.
Even though it sounds rather horrifying today?
Yeah, I mean, the Jubilee is the moment when the slaves are freed. So the year of the Jubilo is a moment where the shroud of slavery is lifted.
Was there a marked difference between the songs of the Union and the Confederacy?
Well, I mean, obviously, the lyrical point of view was different. But as I said, there were songs that sort of went both ways, and that is even say the Battle Cry of Freedom, they would have different lyrics to suit the different perspective.
So the Battle Cry of Freedom could be seen as a Southern. In Southern terms, is fighting for the freedom to have slaves?
Maybe so. I think that you know, the nuances are open to interpretation.
Now, during most wars, there are also anti-war songs. Were there any anti-war songs during the Civil War?
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of resistance to going to war, at least in the North, less, I guess, in the South.
Well, I think, you know, one of the most interesting performances on the record is done by Steve Earle and Dirk Powell, and where they basically take a song and play it with two different points of view. One, a soldier writing to his mother, basically saying, "Farewell, mother, I'm going into battle. You may never see me again." And then the next perspective basically says, "Fear not, mother. I'm going the other way. I'm not going to go into battle." So I think those, in a sense, that's sort of looking at the war as both an engagement and a disengagement.
Well, there are songs like "Take Your Gun and Go, John." You have Loretta Lynn singing
right.
That. That sounds like an enlistment song in a way. Mother
yeah.
saying, "You got to go to this war," but then there are all these other songs that have to do with the history of the war. How did they tell us much about the history that we might not have known about otherwise? Like songs like "Hells Broke Loose in Georgia" and "The Fall of Charleston."
Yeah, I think they. You know, I mean, this is a living oral history. The Battle of Antietam that T-Bone Burnett does basically details the story of the battle, and so I think it's through music and through song that certain nuances and distinctions in history are detailed.
Were there any love songs?
There were very many love songs. I mean, this is the sentimental age, the mid-19th century. And so there are songs, I think, of lovers, love's loss and family split apart and the hope and linger of romance.
And I'm assuming a fair number of religious songs at the time, because that was a time of religious ferment.
I think that, you know, I think a lot of this music is probably born out of the church in terms of melody. So I think as far as our collection goes, it's a little bit less oriented towards, say, the lyrics of the church.
World. My guess is Randall Poster, who's the producer of Divided and United, the Songs of the Civil War, a 32-track collection that explores the musical legacy of the Civil War. We tend to think of these songs as having roots in folk music, but you mentioned Stephen Foster. He was a composer. Were many of these songs composed in the same way that songs might be composed today by professional songwriters?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is an era where there really is the, I think maybe there's a emerging middle class that's playing music at home, and so the songs that are sort of at the top of the pops are things that are being bought as sheet music and being played on parlor pianos and mandolin clubs. And so many of these composers, Stephen Foster among them, are working as professional songwriters, working for public music publishing companies.
And making their livings from the sale of sheet music.
Yeah.
Another one is George F. Root. I had never heard of him, but you include four songs by him.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a handful of these characters in this period who are really the, for lack of maybe a better way of saying it, sort of the Justin Timberlakes of the day, in that they are really striking a relatively regular chord with a music-loving audience and finding their compositions wildly popular.
Well, you can only guess at how these songs were sung at the time when you were producing this record.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the ambitions that we had, was to try to strip things down so they felt really human and immediate rather than antique-y. And in some of my research and listening to some of the collections that had been done in decades past, they seemed to adapt this sort of veneer, old-timey veneer, and we wanted to strip that away and really try to mine the most basic human connections. And so I think that these renderings with very simple arrangements probably resemble some of the period sounds of the day. We can only guess, I would say.
How did you go about matching the voices of all of these artists to the songs?
Well, we sort of did these things sort of one at a time. And so we knew that we wanted to cover the different categories of songs, whether they were, like we talked about, histories or sentimental songs or songs from the North, songs from the South, abolitionist songs. And so we knew we wanted to have songs in all of those genres, and then basically took them one by one and just felt we knew we needed to have great singers. And so with each artist, we just entered a dialogue and tried to find the perfect song. Sometimes a suggestion that I made was immediately responded to. Sometimes we went back and forth. And then sometimes there were artists who they knew the song that they wanted to do.
So you try to sign them in some cases. In other cases, they said, you know, I've always loved this song.
Right.
And I want to do it.
With this kind of repertoire, really, if the artist doesn't have some kind of inherent connection to it, it's not really going to work out.
Well, you wind up with Norma Kaufman singing the Mermaid Song.
Right.
How did that happen?
Well, in terms of in some of the research, I mean, that song
is Jefferson Airplane.
Right, Jefferson Airplane. Is that, you know, Yorma is a character who I've always wanted to work with and was a real inspiration to me. And I discovered this song that was really, they say it's sort of a 15th century Scottish folk song. And I just heard his voice on it, and he responded immediately. And one of the great rewards of making this record was that after he recorded the song and he asked me how I liked it, and I said I loved it, and I asked him how he liked it, and he said, you know, Randall, recording this song reminded me of why I started playing guitar in the first place. And if that's the only gold star that we get from this collection, it's ample reward.
You have Loretta Lynn singing Take Your Gun and Go, John.
Right.
That's a Union song?
I think it's a, you know what? I mean, I have to double check.
It could go either way.
A lot of
these songs could probably go either way.
I mean, that's one that Loretta, she wanted to do it. That's a song that she had grown up playing and listening to. So that was just an immediate response back, was I want to do Take Your Gun and Go, John. And if you listen to it, I mean, it's so vivid and so to the point and so just so elemental and strong.
Well, there's one of the songs, The Vacant Chair, is sung by Ralph Stanley. It's my sense that anything that Ralph Stanley sings sounds authentic and probably sounds the same way it did in 1865.
Yeah, I mean, Ralph Stanley, God bless him, we were really persistent in making sure that we got him on this collection, and he certainly doesn't disappoint.
A lot of these people are stars: Ricky Skaggs, Vince Gill, Loretta Lynn, Taj Mahal singing Down by the Riverside, but others are names that, Leanne Womack, some of these names I don't recognize. These people you've worked with in the past?
Some of the people that I have worked with in the past, say Pokey Lafarge, Sam Amidon. But it was really important for me going into this that we would have artists from all the decades. And so we have artists in their 20s through their 80s. And I just felt it was important for it to have a multi-generational point of view.
And you have Dolly Parton only doing kind of a backup.
Yeah. Well, it's funny is that, you know, that was one of the last songs that we did. And Listen to the Mockingbird is sometimes a fiddle tune. And I thought that's what we were going to do. And then we decided to put a vocal on it. And Brian Sutton and his crew felt that Dolly would be the perfect voice, and thankfully she agreed to sing on it.
Well, if PBS ever does another Civil War series,
I'll be ready. I'm ready for it.
This would be great as background music.
Thank you so much.
The 32-track collection that explores the musical legacy of the Civil War is available from, is it ATO Records?
ATO.
ATO, and Randall Poster produced it. It's called Divided and United, the Songs of the Civil War. Could it just as easily have been United and Divided?
It could have very easily have been United and Divided, yep.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Dreaming now of Hallie, sweet Hallie, my sweet Hallie. I'm dreaming tonight of Hallie, for the thought of her is one that never died. She's sleeping now in the valley, my sweet Hallie. She's sleeping tonight in the valley, and the mockingbird is singing where she lies. Listen to the mockingbird, listen to the mockingbird, for the mockingbird is singing over grave. Listen to the mockingbird, listen to the mockingbird, still singing where the weeping willow